Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to Dropping the Gloves. Be quiet, Jason. Thanks for joining us on another episode. This episode's brought to you by our friends at Give Better. Download the app to play. Make 5 picks every day. You have a chance to win $100. Visit givebetter.app/DTG. I just got feedback. All of you didn't sign up, so go sign up today, please, for that. Give us a little boost. We appreciate it. givebetter.app/DTG. Get a chance to win $100. You know who doesn't need $100? Our guest, Jason Demers. The guy's killing it. He's doing TV. He's doing other TV stuff. He just got married. His wife's a famous actress. He won't tell us what her name is. Jason, thanks for joining the show.
How you doing, boys? I'll always take $100 if you're giving it, though.
Well, then go to givebetter.app/DTG. It's a very, very simple way.
Sign up.
But you're not getting any of the back end. Anyways, what are you up to, Jason? We were talking before we came on. You're doing TV with the NHL Network. You're working for the San Jose Sharks. You just got married. Busy, busy, busy. You just retired, what, 2 years ago now?
This year.
Last year?
Last year, yeah. This past season, I was with the Condors in the AHL, and then I played a game with the Oilers. And then I was in their farm system. And then this year I kind of transitioned onto the TV side of things and kind of seeing how it works and been enjoying it so far. So I did, you know, started with the NHL Network and doing some TV stuff for them. And then I'm also doing some San Jose Shark pre and post game stuff. So it's been a great, it's been a cool transition. I had no lag time at all. I just kind of went right to work and it's been fun so far.
Let's backtrack. We talked last. You were going to the Olympics. You were just getting geared up.
Yeah.
Let's talk about that. How weird was that? Because it was, where was the Olympics? In China?
Yeah, it was in Beijing.
Beijing. Was that a little strange? Because that's a completely different culture. The NHL players obviously didn't go. That's why you played.
NHL players still, though.
But just like not the top guys, you know, like the.
I mean, it's a couple top guys, like me and a couple top guys.
Who were the top guys who played?
Me.
What was that? Be honest. So,
Eric Stahl was there.
What was that like? Was it different? Did you go to Sochi then? Because you're an Olympian. Did you go to the Sochi?
It was Beijing, and it was like, it was different, obviously, like because they were still kind of uber COVID crazy with the whole city was shut down and flying into that airport and the whole airport, like an international terminal, was completely shut down. And the only people in there was people in hazmat suits. And you were kind of getting ushered from checkpoint to checkpoint.
No kidding. And
we had to wait like an hour and a half for the bus to take us to the Olympic Village because they wanted to make sure, like, they had us all like kind of in a pen in the middle of the airport. So it was pretty crazy. And then we got there, there's all this security. You always had to wear a mask. You like anytime you pulled your mask down, you'd get like a camera would take a picture of you and would go back to the team services.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah, and you'd kind of get like you'd get dinged. It was just very, very weird. Like we talked to a lot of people that were at prior Olympics, and you know, this was very much a different waters for all of them, and obviously like doing the opening ceremony was incredible. It was like dream come true to do that and walk down, and it was amazing, but it just had a different feel than I would have assumed in past prior years. And I don't know if that's for every year, but the food was awful. And I think I lost like 15 pounds and I was there. It just was like, and I figured out after, I'm like, how do you cook for like that many athletes?
And different nationalities and stuff too. Like,
yeah, that have like the craziest appetites because it's just a bunch of ravenous young athletes just eating every 2 hours. So it was like, there was like a hot pot was like what everybody ate. And it was just like, basically a broth soup that was constantly boiling in a vat.
No way.
And I was just like, I don't know what's in this, but I sure still have gut issues because of it.
Were you around other athletes? Because we talked to other guys who have been to the Olympics. I've never been. Tim's never gone. And it's just a party. Once you finish your event, you go out and you tear it up for the rest of the Olympics. Was there any like fraternization with anybody else?
Canada was strict, but we like, there still was, when we finished, there still was like within our Team Canada group, we had some like good parties. And then, but I heard like we kind of snuck into a few other places as well. But like the USA, I guess USA was throwing bangers and stuff,
no
but
kidding.
Only for like the respective country. So, but yeah, it's like once you finish, you find alcohol somewhere and you go out and you drink and you kind of go watch the other events, which is pretty cool. We went to go see like Big Air. We watched the speed skating, and then it's like you kind of bring in these little like bottles of wine or whatever that whatever you could find and sneak it in. And it was pretty interesting. It was fun. That part was really fun. And obviously playing for Team Canada was incredible with the jersey, you know, playing with the jersey.
Yeah.
And it was such an honor. And then obviously after going to watch the other athletes perform and just kind of marvel at what some of these, you know, the figure skaters that train 4 years for this event, it's a lot different than hockey where you're kind of playing a team sport and then you guys get plucked. Like these people dedicate their lives to this sport.
Yeah.
Years to make it to this moment, so it's pretty incredible to kind of watch them and talk with them, and everybody was super awesome, so all the athletes were great.
Who were the like the celebrities, you know what I mean? Like you have the Olympics, the Summer Olympics, it's like the NBA guys, everybody knows them, it's the Simone Biles, she's like the famous. Who was the one who you saw that you were like, what, the figure skaters, what's her name? She won gold, the ice dancing from Canada. She was probably pretty famous. Like, was there someone that you ran into? You're like, oh, this is pretty cool.
I mean, like the biggest celebrity there, cause it's like winter, was like Shaun White was there. That was his year. So it's like Shaun White's there. So everybody's, you know, looking out for him. And, we had, for me, it was always I was fascinated by the speed skaters, like the short track, just because their legs are so incredibly big and they do this, like, it's actually crazy to watch it live, short track, because like, there's always a crash, like almost every round, and they were going so fast. Like people don't realize like it at home, I'm sure it's great, but in person, they're just whipping around the track. So, and they, you know, the blade on their skate is like, so long. And I'm like, how do people not cut themselves and things like that? And they go tumbling into the board. So that was pretty cool to see them. Obviously the funniest one was that American figure skater. I can't remember his first name, but his last name is Chen. And he was like, it was funny because he's a figure skater and, you know, coming from the hockey world, we have a kind of ingrained sense of bravado in us, and this was like the guy, and everybody, like everybody that was there was like, oh my god, it's Chen, and we're like, who the hell is this guy? So we kind of, but it was just incredible to watch also the figure skaters, how precise they are and how incredible they do their job and they perform. It's very impressive just to see all the other athletes, and you get a newfound respect for all these sports for sure.
So going into that, we talked, you're like, my goal is to get an NHL deal. You wanted to, you know, open some eyes, show people you can still play. That didn't come to fruition after the games, but you did get a deal to play in the KHL.
Yeah. So I played in Russia before. Yeah. I got a deal. So I played in that like Russia series. It's like a tournament. That they have, it was like a pre-tournament. I went there with Team Canada off of my back surgery. I kind of was still not 100%, but I was like, I need to go play. And
yeah,
this is where the comeback has to start. So I played in that series. It was like 3 games in 4 nights. I hadn't practiced with the team or played a game. I had one practice with the guys, and I went into that game, and it was like the 75th anniversary. So you're like, we're sitting on the line and they're playing the Russia anthem before the game. And they have like Putin's there. And like, they're
no
like,
kidding.
Yeah. And apparently like all the Larionov, all the stud ex-Russian guys were there from CCR. And they're just like, they're USSR, whatever. I can never get that right. And then apparently like they had given money to all the guys that they had to like kill us. And I mean, it was like a playoff game. So I'd played or practiced in like a year. And I literally was like, uh-oh. Cause they're all the guys were standing in line with the Team Canada guys. And they're like, oh, they're like, you know, usually Russia like plays like a trap. They don't really come that hard. And it was like two all over the ice. They're running us late. It was dirty, but it was like also like great. Cause I'm like my first game back off of back surgery. I'm like, I need to test this. And I'm like, I need to see if this is possible. So I got through that. It was good. Everything went well. And then I signed with a KHL team because Team Canada wanted me to get more games. So I went over to Kazan and I played like five games. It was a great time. The organization treated me like gold and we had some great imports there. I was with Eric Fair, Stephen Camphor, Mark Barberio, Jordan Wheel, and Par Lindholm. So like we had such a great group of guys.
But why? Okay, here's my question. Why were they doing all that for you? Because you're coming off a back surgery, unproven. A, why would you risk it? And B, why were they doing that for you? Were you that much of a commodity? They're like, we need Jason Demers at all costs. Because I played with you. You're good.
You've seen my pedigree. I'm just unbelievable hockey player.
You're good. But like,
I'm probably up there in like some of the most underrated players in NHL history. But, you know, it is what it is. It's just, you know how it is, just being undervalued and underappreciated. But within certain small circles in the hockey world, I'm that guy.
So they had someone in their circle who believed that you were like, we need Jason. We got to get him out here.
I'm a big complimentary player.
I believe it. I played with you. You're a great player.
I don't think the extent of which they knew my surgery, that was more me taking a risk in terms of, I was like, I can do it.
Okay.
I'll come and play. And obviously this was like a tryout before. So I had to go play in the KHL after and the five games went great. And then they brought me to the camp and, you know, the Olympics went good. It's a little frustrating. The coach we had was not, I don't think, fitted for that style of tournament.
Who was the coach?
Claude Julien. And I only say that because we butted heads quite a bit during that tournament. And
like his strategy wasn't good or what?
Yeah, it's just different. He's just an old school coach and that just doesn't quite work in a tournament like that. You just kind of, and also you get a lot of guys from Europe that play and it's not NHL guys. So these guys are used to a different system and they're used to a different way of playing hockey. So it's like you have to cater to them. So he got hurt before we went over to Beijing at the pre-tournament stuff. And like, it wasn't really going great. Like guys, not that guys weren't a fan of him, but it just wasn't clicking. And then he got hurt an unfortunate accident. And I'm glad he's okay now. But Jeremy Colleton stepped in and he was incredible. And like, it immediately shifted the mood in the room and like, and the mood on the ice. And like, everything started clicking. Wow. We went over to Beijing and he coached us for the first game against Germany. And we played our best game of the tournament. We throttled Germany. And like, I was literally afterwards, I was like, we have a chance to win or medal.
Yeah.
And then he was injured. So we didn't think he was coming for the tournament. And he ended up flying in and jumping back in to coach us instead of kind of seeing that, you know, maybe sitting in the back and just seeing how well we were doing and being like, let's just like support from afar and be like a good, you know, like, cause we're all in this together at the end of the day. It's not about one guy. It's not about you. It's not about the coach. It's about what best fits in that tournament. Cause it's a sprint. So he came back and let's just say it threw it off a little bit. We played US the next game. And I mean, we're all out of sync and it wasn't the best. And then we beat China, you know, as we should have. We beat China two games in a row and then we had Sweden, and we ended up losing 1-0 in the quarterfinals, and it was like a game we should have easily won, but just the way things were implemented and explained, it wasn't.
Yeah,
you know, I got it and understood it. A lot of guys did that kind of understood his style of coaching because we'd seen it. But the guys that kind of played in Europe and the younger guys, we had a lot of young guys as well. You know, Jack McBain he was still in college. Owen Power was coming, was young. We had Kent Johnson. So it's like you also have to, these kids play college. They're not used to old school NHL. You got to, they're not there yet. And you don't have a full NHL season to break these guys in where it's
you got to simplify it.
It's a sprint. So it's got to be very simple and very straightforward. And it was very complicated. And listen, we butted heads quite a bit, but I'm just glad he didn't die and divorce. It was scary, but
glad you're not dead, but you really ruined this Olympics for me.
Yeah. But it just wasn't, you know, it wasn't something that was in sync, and it kind of goes back to the old school mentality of coaching is the coaches that haven't changed their style. I feel like with the way the NHL is changing, and John, you see this just doing broadcasts with the Hawks, like the old school coaches that are still around have adapted. And if you don't adapt, the kids are different now. They're not the same as they were. They're not these, it's a lot more, not fragile mentally, but you know, there's a lot more awareness towards mental health, and guys have different outlets for blowing off steam than we used to have, which was like, wasn't great back then, but also it certainly got the job done. But you know, now it's like coaches have more of a responsibility and have more pressure on them to kind of get through to these guys mentally. So it's, you see with a lot of the new style coaches that are successful, and these the older ones that are coming back that are really like having huge impacts, like it's a different game completely now.
Yeah, mental health wasn't a thing even 10 years ago. It's like, no. If you would have said, coach, I need a day for mental health, you're like, get the hell out of here. Like, are you hungover? What are you talking about?
Yeah, they tell you to go get a beer, or they tell you to, you know, you just rub some dirt on it and keep going. You know, there's no crying in baseball or hockey or whatever it is, whatever the analogy is. But yeah, it's just, it's different game now for kids. And there's a lot more emphasis on taking care of guys' mental health. And there's more stress because, you know, there's less drinking, there's less prescription pills that there was, you know, 15 years ago. And there's just, so now it's, the stress is full bore. It's in your face. So a lot of kids, it's hard to handle. So
well,
now
and then they're just like this, looking at everybody, what they think of them all the time too.
Yeah,
so
that's, Twitter is a huge factor. And so is Instagram and all these social media apps that just destroy these kids mentally. And I mean, I'll be honest, you look at that sometimes and you're like, people are clever on those apps. And they can certainly throw a barb or two if they want to.
They can. So before we move on from the Olympics, I want to ask, maybe just clarify a little bit without going into too many details, but like in the X's and O's of how you felt that Julian wanted to run a system versus guys, the younger kids and Europeans that couldn't adapt to it. Like, what were the differences in playing styles and strategy?
It's, you know, he is that old school. The issue with him and you know, I'm never, I hate airing grievances, but it's just he would explain everything from A to Z that was, he thought was going to happen in the game, so that if something went wrong, he can be like, well, I told you so. Instead of being like, this is where we're strongest. This is where we're going to lean towards today. Listen, this might happen, but like, if we play our game, we're going to be fine. Instead of kind of just diving through this like A to Z. So these meetings would take like 20 minutes before the game, and guys are like asleep in the room. And if something good went right, it would be like, well, it's all because of me. I did it. You know, it's because of my system. And if it went wrong, it was like, well, it's because you didn't do it the right way.
So he's like, I had you prepared. What's the problem?
Yeah. So I believe in, like, I love a detail-oriented coach. Like, Todd McClellan's one of my favorite coaches. He's detail-oriented, but it's clear and it's succinct. And it's like, to the point where it's like, if you do make a mistake, you know yourself, you're like, I did it. No, nothing has to be said. Whereas like when there's indecision and it's not taught the right way, and then you're like, well, I prepared you. It's like, well, you told us what was going to happen, but it's not like there was a clear and concise detail of what actually should have happened. So we butted heads on that a lot. And, you know, maybe I was in the wrong and I shouldn't have voiced my opinion, but I just kind of, I always saw it as, especially with the, it's not that they don't know how to play the game in Europe, but it's just a different style of teaching. And, you know, they play on the big ice. They don't play. And it was, we were playing on American ice, and you have a lot of kids fresh out of college. Like they're playing a college system where, in the D zone, you know, you close quick below the hash marks as the D man. But if that forward gets above the hash marks, you fold back in. The centerman takes the guy high. So you never have a D man that's up at the point.
Yeah.
And it just was not, it just, it was one of those things. He explained it and guys weren't getting it. And he kind of kept saying, oh, once we get it, it's going to be great. So just like,
well, if you had half a season to work on it and like a bunch of practices, that's great. But
yeah.
Whereas we need to win like, now.
Whereas it's like in a tournament like that, you kind of got to literally, it's got to be clear in the sense of like the handoff needs to be known, or you have to go man on man potentially and just kind of hope that you have enough of the personnel. But, you know, I thought it, again, we were, it was 1-0 against Sweden. It just was the feeling in the room when we lost was very much, we let something slip that we could have easily meddled. And it was, that was the frustrating part.
That's tough.
You know, that's not on one person. It's not on Claude. It's on all of us and Canada as a whole. So, you know, it was just all very frustrating.
It's on Claude Julien. That's who it sounds like it's on.
I mean, we could, I don't want to point fingers, but no, it's on everybody. And listen, it's a team sport for a reason. It's just, those are, you know, you just try to all be on the same page. So it's like when you're not on the same page and it doesn't work out, it's just that much frustrating. You know, you've been on good teams, John, where it's like things are, you see it and you're like, it could be so good, but it's not clicking the right way. And it's,
well,
like
when we were on San Jose, we had an incredible team and it just,
the most frustrating thing,
unraveled. Yeah.
So just switching gears now, you played both in the KHL and the AHL, and I'm seeing a lot of debate online over the years of like, what's the second best hockey league in the world? And maybe there's probably benefits and levels of skill to both, but now that you've played in both, what are some of the differences you see between the two styles?
Well, KHL plays like, they're like 75% of the league plays a full-on trap, so it's a lot more defensive. It's like 90s NHL, and it's very much, guys feast on the power play. And don't get me wrong, it's a great league. Switzerland's a great league as well. And the big ice, that's very much different. But they're so different because the travel in the KHL is some of the hardest I've seen. You know, you're flying, you know, it feels like there's 30 time zones in Russia, and you're doing 10-hour flights, and you're like on a 10-hour time zone change. And we played a game, and we played in Vladivostok, and we were in Kazan. So we flew there, and because the time zone change is so incredibly large, let's say it's a 7 p.m. game and it's a 10-hour time zone difference, you treat that game like it's a 9
afternoon game, yeah, or something.
Like a 9 a.m. game. You treat it like it's a 9 a.m. game, so you get up, you sleep exactly like it would be a 9 a.m. game. So you're sleeping in the middle of the day and you're getting up. So you're going for breakfast before the game because they're like 9 a.m. game. You're just going to get up at, we're going to get up at 7, go eat your breakfast and go to the rink. So you get up at 7 and people are having like happy hour, like cocktail hour.
So you're, that's like, weird.
It's weird, but it's, you never get, what's crazy about it and so smart about it is you never get jet lagged.
Yeah.
There's no, so when I kind of came back, I was like, I wonder if the NHL, if you're on like a long, if you're San Jose and you're playing all the teams like the Rangers, you're playing the Rangers, the Islanders, the Devils, and like Philly, if you'd stay on West Coast time, so you treat every game like it's a 4 p.m. game, And I just like, I was kind of kicking it around. I was like, I wonder if that would like actually work, or even in the playoffs, like in the finals, if you were to stay, you know, San Jose in the finals playing against New York, if you were to stay on East Coast time and like not do that.
Yeah. Switch over. It probably would work because it makes sense.
Yeah. I mean, what's crazy is we were over there and you never once got jet lagged. So you came back and it wasn't like this weird fighting it, but you know, AHL last year, AHL's a great league. It's an incredible league in terms of there's more youth in there than there's been in the past. Like, it's a lot more young guys than when I started. So it's a little bit more scrambly. Like, KHL is a lot of like, there's a lot of men there. It's mm-hmm. like guys that are like 28 and up. So it's a different style of hockey for sure. But, you know, I've kind of told guys for years, I'm a big advocate. Like, if you're struggling in the AHL and you're kind of, you see yourself as like a career AHLer, like go overseas and play, make some money. You can make really good money and the hockey's really good. They treat you really well. And I'm just like, instead of kind of grinding it out in the A for 12 years, you can live a good life out there. The hockey's a little bit, you know, it's, you go play in Switzerland, it's not as physical. You sleep in your bed every night. So it's like, there's like benefits to both of them. But you know, if you're chasing the NHL dream, stay in the AHL because it's your best path. But yeah.
Well, you were chasing your dream. And then after Russia, you signed a PTO with the Oilers. So yes, sir. Did you know that this was obviously the opportunities were getting short? Did you have any other options other than Edmonton to go to, or was this the best opportunity?
I initially I didn't have anything. So I called Jay Woodcroft and asked him for a chance to go to camp and went to camp and it went really well. And they asked me to extend the PTO and the AHL and kind of told me initially that like, oh, your kind of first call up. And if somebody gets hurt, and which funny is that year, no, none of their D got hurt. I think almost all five played like 82, which is
no kidding,
which is incredible. And one of those funny things. So I stayed down there. I had a great experience, you know, being a mentor to a lot of the young guys, and their organization as a whole was great to me. And early on, I think I was like a month in to the PTO and the Rangers asked if I wanted to come do a PTO with them and be their first call up. And I kind of, that was like a tough decision. And, you know, hindsight being 2020, I was like, oh, I would have played in New York 100% last year because I know they brought up Ben Harper for a while, who was down there. They ended up kind of bringing Ben Harper on afterwards.
So how does that work? You had a PTO and you were playing with the Condors and they still could have signed you because you weren't on a full contract?
So you're like, because the PTO is like month to month. So
okay,
I was getting to the end of it and I was like, listen, like I'm either sign me or don't. Like at that point, what's funny is like every D on the Condors, we like had like three guys get hurt. So we literally were like, it was like I was playing a lot of minutes.
Yeah.
At an age where I was like, I didn't really want to be playing 25 a night. So my body was just on AHL travel. So like, it was great. It was fun to kind of be the guy a little bit and enjoy that time. But I was like, listen, I'll give you 16 to 18.
Yeah.
But I'm like, not much more than that afterwards.
So what happens then? Ranger, they come knocking and then you just kind of force Edmonton to.
Yeah. My agent at the time was just like, Rangers kind of called the Rangers because he's like, if they don't sign you, we're going to look to put you somewhere else. So I would have continued my PTO because they could then sign you to another PTO.
Yeah.
For another month. So they would have brought me in and, yeah, in hindsight now, I would have been like, oh, I probably would have been up with the Rangers, but you know, I wanted to stay. I thought the Oilers, you know, loyal. I wanted to be loyal to them in the sense of they gave me a chance and were giving me a look, and they ended up signing me after that for the year. So it was good. Worked out.
And so then talk about that one game, because I did the same thing with Montreal. My last season, I was in the AHL, and the GM for the Canadiens called me and he says, hey, we want to call you up to kind of do you a favor, pick a game and you can come up to Montreal. You were sitting at 699. did Woody call you and say, hey, Jason, we want to, you know, get you that 700, or how does that work?
Well, I kind of went into the season trying to get that. That was kind of my goal from the 2 years prior with my back surgery. And you know, had I not gotten back surgery, I probably would have never been in that situation. Yeah. So, that was kind of the goal from the start, was to get it. So they kind of knew that. And we were kind of getting down to the end of the season. And I was like, they might have forgot. You know, they were in a playoff hunt. So, and, you know, they had told me I was going to get called up at one point, and then I got a concussion. I got injured. So, and then they obviously, which worked out great for them and great for that kid who's really taking the opportunity, ran with it. Vincent Deharnais ended up getting called up over me because I was out, but he's been phenomenal for them. And like, he's such a great fit and he's such a good kid. So I root for him so much, and I'm so happy to see him. He puts in so much work. So, you know, him getting up there was the right fit for them, and it's worked out great. So, but we're kind of getting to the last like month or so of the season, and we're in San Jose playing the Barracuda. And I always kind of tell the story. It's funny. I kind of look down the bench and, you know, it's a back to back. I'm exhausted and I'm kind of like, this league was kind of one of those, the dog day area. And I was like, I don't even know if I'm going to get this and you know, what's going on. And I look down the bench and I see Dan Boyle sitting there and he's giving me the finger in the crowd. I'm just like, Boiler? So I'm like laughing. So he texts me after the game and he's like, what are they doing? Like, are they going to give you your 700th? And I'm like, I think so. Like, I have no idea. So he like texted Woody, and whether he was one of the determining factors, but he like texted Woody like, hey, give this guy his game. So whether he was one of the factors for that or not, there was like 3 days later, they brought me up and there was in San Jose, which was great. It was a full house. It was like their last home game. It was great. They gave me a good shout out on the Jumbotron. All my family was there.
Oh, cool.
It was awesome. My niece was there. My now wife was there. And it was just an incredible experience to have that. And you know, like as a player, you don't really get, not many guys get to choose the way they go out. And it's kind of a privilege to be able to choose where you go and the way you say kind of bye to the game. And so for me, I'm super grateful for that.
So it sounds like at that point you knew you were going to retire after that season ended.
Yeah. I mean, I never like using that word retire. I kind of always stick to, I'm just not playing anymore. I'm finding another place to play. I just find for us, it's a game and it's a kid's game. And yes, there's the business aspect to it, but it'll always be a kid's game to me. And that's kind of why I always enjoyed it and played it with a smile on my face and tried to laugh and lighten the mood because it, you know, there is so much stress behind it, but at the end of the day, it's a game. So for me, it's just, I'm not playing right now. And I always kind of leave the window open of like, hey, potentially who knows? Like, you know, I'm 35. It's not in the realm that who knows if one day I wake up and I'm like, let's give it another go. Let me go play somewhere else in Europe or something like that. So I always leave the door open now to say that the percentage is very slim because I'm enjoying my TV time and I'm enjoying being in the ivory tower.
Yeah.
Above all and kind of getting to do what I want and talking shit and talking crap.
You see Jumbo around the way at all?
I saw him last week when I was here.
What is he up to? Is he kicking the tires? He's getting his jersey retired soon, right?
I can't wait. That's next year, and I'm making sure my schedule is clear to play in that. And
he's going to have a game.
I think he'll do like the like kind of like what they did with Patty Marlowe, you know, that alumni day before. So that'll be fun. We'll have to get you out and get some skates on you.
I know I only played with you guys for a year, but I feel like I left an imprint, an indelible mark.
You did. I think your jersey is retired up in the Barracuda and the TCU.
I always say the year I had the most fun was the Sharks. I don't know for what reason. We had a good group of guys, and we just really got along well with you and Mike Brown and Jumbo, and it was just a fun time, right? Tim, you would have loved it. It was a good time.
Timmy would have poured it on out there.
We drank on the plane, I think, was the big difference. We just had fun because those long flights are tough, but then if you just relax, you used to make this concoction.
Don't they have the best like bar on board in the Sharks, like they're playing with the candy and the, it's incredible.
Was it you who used to make shakes like for everybody?
Yeah, the smoothies.
Yeah.
We had a blender on board, Timmy, with, they had like, they would make full on like blueberry smoothies with like booze in it if you wanted.
If you wanted.
After a game, you could have a protein shake on the plane with a little buzz, just a buzz protein shake.
It was good. All right, you're an NHL insider now. I'm going to give you some quick questions. Just give me a brief thought. Are the Canucks legit Stanley Cup contenders, Jason?
Yes. And I say that with so much. There's a common theme of me butting heads with coaches, but, you know, personally, me and Rick talking don't have much positive things to probably say about each other, but the one thing I will say positive about him is he gets the most out of his guys, and he's got them playing. And I was talking to somebody about this a couple days ago. I love what they did with their decor.
Yeah,
I love that they're heavy. Those four, you know, 3, 4, 5, 6 are really heavy.
Susie, Zadorov, Cole. Yeah.
Now I think 4 or 5 weeks. I think he hurt his hand, but
yeah.
Cole. I've loved Hronek's game, and obviously Quinn Hughes. You can't say enough good things about him. Tyler Myers is, you know, in that role as like a 5-6, or you know, 4-5-6.
Very effective.
I think he's good with that big body. Up front, I think they're getting so much out of that now second line, which is Garland, Dakota Johnson. And Bluger, I think they're getting a ton out of that line. And I'm such a big fan of Connor Garland. And I think now that I don't think he's ever had a guy to kind of protect him like Josh was doing.
Yeah.
And it's been fun to watch that line. And obviously, you know, you could talk about Besser and those guys, but I was like looking at what makes them so complete. And I mean, yeah, they have a lot of guys that they developed out of the A and you know, that coaching staff of,
I said keep it brief, Jason.
Oh, sorry. Yes. I talk a lot. No.
If you want to get an in-depth feel of Connor Garland, we talked to him last week on the show. So just just go back last week. He's right there. Great kid.
Okay, yeah. But yes, they are.
Did you want to talk another 20 minutes again, or can
you can edit the rest out, Timmy? Yes.
Well, we're gonna, there's heavy editing that's gonna happen. I don't want to brush past this. Why are you and Rick Tocchet feuding? When did you guys cross paths?
I won't air any. We've been in Arizona.
What happened in Arizona? He didn't, much like Claude Julien. It sounds like you blame the coaches a lot, Jason.
No, I have a lot of coaches that I like.
Like it's just one, Todd McClellan. And then.
No, Scotty Allen.
Oh, okay.
Rihanna, love him.
But Rick Tocchet didn't really mesh well with your style of play.
We did at the start. It just had we had a bad breakup. I'll leave it at that.
You just didn't want to back check, or you didn't want to finish your check? Because it seems like he's a pretty hard nosed coach.
I always played hard. That's one thing. I always played hard.
Okay.
But yeah.
Okay. You're getting really quiet. Usually you go on. What is there something there you want
to say? Because I don't like to go personal. I don't like to air grievances.
You were pretty quick to throw Julien under the bus. Why you guys didn't win gold?
If you remember and you don't edit that out and pull the funny nonsense, I came back and said, listen, he's great. It's just he had to adjust. He's a better option than Colton. I never said him as a person. So don't you put that evil on me?
Oh, that's funny. All right, so the Sharks are in the running for, you know, what's his name again? The young stud, Celebrini. The number one overall pick, Celebrini. A couple teams that are supposed to be good or not good. I want your thoughts on Ottawa and Buffalo. What's not working in those two spots?
I mean, frustrating to watch. I mean, I don't know if Jacques Martin is the answer for that team.
Again, coaches right under the bus. What is going on with you?
hey, listen, you don't need a coach to win, but you can, a coach can certainly help you lose.
Oh, man, Tim, there's something
There's a quote.
That Jason is just maybe not coachable. Is that what I'm hearing?
No, I there's things that I can sit back and say that, yes, I know at times I would probably be frustrating for a coach, 100%, 100%.
And a teammate, too.
What?
And you're frustrating for a teammate as well.
The one thing I'm for the guys, maybe to a fault, and I'll back the guys no matter what. But no, listen, listen, Jacques Martin invented the Lemaire line before Jacques Lemaire was doing it. Like he was a co. I just, you know, as an advisor, yes, but as a head coach with that team that's so high flying offense, like you need a new age style coach. You need a Carberry type coach that's going to teach these guys defending, or, you know, and Scotty Allen, who's in Washington with Carberry, and what he's done with that team. Like, I think Ottawa's roster to a man is way better than the Washington Capitals, but like the Washington Capitals are found a way to defend and play defense and stay in games. And, you know, obviously I just think it's figuring out how to play defense and toe that line of, you know, they're so good offensively, but they just can't put together a solid.
What other coaches suck, Jason?
Oh, you don't want to get me going on that. No, that's the only
hates coaches.
No, coaches I love, Jeremy Colleton. That's it.
You know, I scored more goals than Jason when I played with him in San Jose, and I played half the games, Tim.
Did you?
Is that right? You had three?
I had three.
Did you?
I don't know how many you had.
That was right before I got traded.
Yeah, I was on fire that year.
And went on a tear after that.
Yeah, it was the better coach.
Yeah, Lindy Ruff. Ruffles.
All right, that's enough. We're going to let you go. Is there anything you want to push? Is there any coaching clinic that you have for our fans that you want to push out there?
Yeah, Jason Demers coaching clinic, where I just poo-poo on all the coaches in the NHL.
Oh, Jason, thanks for joining us, man. I appreciate it. I keep doing good with San Jose and the NHL Network. Check them out if you're in those markets. Or just get NHL Network. And then this is Dusty Rhodes. So that was Sting from NWO.
And DDP, too.
All right, everybody. Thanks for listening. Cheers.
Thanks for listening to Dropping the Gloves with John Scott, a member of the Nation Network of Podcasts. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts from to never miss an episode.